Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Translation, in succession, O King, the great sage Narada instructed Srimad Bhagavatam unto the unlimitedly powerful Vyasadeva, who meditated in devotional service upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, on the bank of the river Sarasvati. Purport. In the fifth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada instructed the great sage Vyasadeva as follows. Ata mahabhaga bhavannamo gudrik suchi shravaha satyarato dritavrata urukramasya kilabanda muktaye samadhina smura tatvijastitam. A greatly fortunate pious philosopher, your name and fame are universal, and you are fixed in the absolute truth with spotless character and infallible vision. I ask you to meditate upon the activities of the personality of Godhead, whose activities are unparalleled. So in a disciplic succession of the Brahma Sampradaya, the practice of yoga meditation is not neglected. But because the devotees are bhakti yogis, they do not undertake the trouble to meditate upon the impersonal Brahman, as indicated here. They meditate on Brahma Paramam, or the Supreme Brahman. Brahman realization begins from the impersonal effulgence. But by further progress of such meditation, manifestation of the Supreme Soul, Paramatma realization takes place. And progressing further, realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fixed. Sri Narada Muni, as the spiritual master of Vyasadeva, knew very well the position of Vyasadeva. And thus he certified the qualities of Srila Vyasadeva as fixed in the absolute truth with great vow, etc. Narada advised meditation upon the transcendental activities of the Lord. Impersonal Brahman has no activities, but the personality of Godhead has many activities. And all such activities are transcendental, without any tinge of material quality. If the activities of the Supreme Brahman were material activities, then Narada would not have advised Vyasadeva to meditate upon them. And the Param Brahma is Lord Sri Krishna, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna realized the factual position of Lord Krishna, he addressed Lord Krishna in the following words: Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adidevam Majam Vibhum, Ahustvam Rishaye Sarve Devashi Naradastata, Ashito Devala Vyasa Svayam Chaiva Bhavashimi. Arjuna summarized the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita by his realization of Lord Sri Krishna and thus said, My dear Personality of Godhead, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the original person, in eternal form of bliss and knowledge, and this is confirmed by Narada, Ashita Devala, and Vyasadeva. And above all, your personal self has also confirmed it. Bhagavad Gita 10, 12, 13. When Vyasadeva fixed his mind in meditation, he did it in bhakti yoga trance, and actually saw the Supreme Person with Maya, the illusory energy, in contraposition. As we have discussed before, the Lord's Maya or illusion is also a representation, because Maya has no existence without the Lord. Darkness is not independent of light. Without light, no one can experience the contraposition of darkness. However, this Maya or illusion cannot overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but stands apart from him, apashrayam. Therefore, the perfection of meditation is realization of the personality of Godhead along with his transcendental activities. Meditation on the impersonal Brahman is troublesome business for the meditator, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, klesho adhikatar ste samavyakta shakta chetasam. Translation again. In succession, O King, the great sage Narada instructed Srimad Bhagavatam unto the unlimitedly powerful Vyasadeva, who meditated in devotional service upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, on the bank of the river Sarasvati. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshushun Militam Jena Tasme Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tiramine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pajarine Nivashasya Sunivari Pastichade Shatarine. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasti Gaura Bhakta Brinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Ma Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasna Bhutale Shimati Shivaram Swamiti Namine. Vanchakaupat Rupeshcha Kripa Sindhu Bhiyavacha Paditana Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namana Maha. Hare Krishna. Before I begin, I'd just like to take blessings and permission from all the senior Vaishnavas here and everyone else. Hare Krishna. So we're continuing this chapter. Previous chapter was all about Lord Brahma, how Krishna imparted Lord Brahma with transcendental knowledge. So in this material world, actually, even Lord Brahma, who's the most intelligent being in the entire universe, it's said from Lord Brahma down to the insignificant ant, everyone is born in darkness or ignorance. And it is the spiritual master that opens the eyes with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. So Krishna imparted this transcendental knowledge to Lord Brahma. And we heard in the previous chapter, in this chapter we had the Chatush Sloki. Which is the essence, the Chatush Sloka is the essence of all the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna actually imparted transcendental knowledge to Lord Brahma and he gave him the Atharva Veda. Because originally there was only one Veda. And that was the Atharva Veda. So the Atharva Veda, Lord Brahma, he gave that to Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, he gave it to Vyasadev. So that's the process of parampara. Disciplic succession. And we come in the Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So Lord Brahma is the top most personality in our Sampradaya. So when it's described when Vyasadeva got the Atharva Veda, he split it in four. The Rig, Sama, Yajo, and the Atharva Veda. And it said that the Chatur Sloki has all the essence of all the different Vedas in it, within it. It's like the Rig Veda. It said the first verse of the Rig Veda is incorporated in the first mantra of the Chatur Sloki, and the essence of the first verse of the Sama Veda is incorporated in the second mantra of the Chatur Sloki. And then the first verse, or the essence of the first mantra in the Yajur Veda is incorporated in the third Chatur Sloki, and the Atharva Veda is incorporated in the fourth Chatur Sloki. So all the Vedas are within the Chatur Sloki. So then Navyasida, after dividing it into four, he wrote the essence, which is the Vedanta Sutra. And the Pranas and the Mahabharata. So one main question, what's the difference between the Vedas and the Puranas? The difference is, Prabhupada explains, he says it's like the difference between the Brahmins and the Parivakaracharyas. So the Brahmins are meant to do yagyas, and they're meant to be expert. So in order to do the yagyas, they have to be expert in chanting these mantras. And every syllable they chant has to be done perfectly. So this is the Brahmins. That's the Puranas. So the Vedas are usually spoken or read by the Parivakaracharyas, who are the preachers, the devotees of the Lord, right? Prabhupada said, one sense there's no difference between the two. Because the aim is the same. The aim is to get love of God, to get Krishna. Chanting mantras mechanically isn't the process, isn't the way. It is mainly through transcendental realization. So when Narada Muni came to the Sarasvati where Vyasadeva was, he was feeling dejected, he was feeling uninspired. He wasn't feeling, does that sound familiar? Feeling uninspired and feeling dejected. Yeah, so this is how Vyasadeva was feeling. And Narada Muni is the guru of Vyasadeva. One may question, well, why does Vyasadeva need the guru? He's the spiritual master of all spiritual masters. But he's an acharya, therefore he has to show by example. Yeah. So he wasn't feeling very inspired. And then Narada Muni asked him, Narada Muni said, I know, he glorified Vyasadeva because he knew Vyasadeva was a great personality. And he said, what is seen to be your problem? I can see you're not, sorry, I'm from London, that's what they say in London, what's your problem? Maybe he didn't say it in that way. But Narada Muni knew what his problem was, why he was feeling like this. It was because he had presented all the Vedas, the Puranas, and he had presented the Mahabharata. But he had emphasized too much on artha kama moksha and dharma, religiosity, sense gratification, fruitive activity and liberation. Narada Muni said, because you've emphasized too much on these things, this is why you're not feeling blissful. You're not feeling happy. And then he said, because you have emphasized too much on these things, then people will, in the future, they would follow you and they will miss the point, the main point of life, which is to become, develop love of God, develop a distaste for material enjoyment, and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. But you've emphasized too much on these things. And everyone's just going to use that as an excuse to enjoy sense gratification. So sometimes we feel like this in our spiritual life. We may feel uninspired, you know. We have to question, why is that? Why do I feel uninspired? I mean, Vyasadeva, he's the plenary portion incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He's feeling inspired, uninspired. And Narada Muni told him why. So this is the purpose of a guru, to take instruction from the guru. The guru isn't someone who we used as a counselor or a psychiatrist. His purpose is to give us transcendental knowledge, just like Krishna did to Brahma, and just like Brahma did to Narada Muni, and now Narada Muni is doing to Vyasadeva. Because we can take so much guidance, material guidance from so many people in this world. You know, there's so many psychiatrists, so many lawyers, so many doctors. But very few people want to give transcendental knowledge, which is the precious jewel. Yeah. So sometimes we feel uninspired, right? This is an example used. That when a hungry, when someone's hungry, yeah, they're feeling hunger, and then they're eating. Two things happen simultaneously: they become full, and they enjoy the process of eating. They enjoy it. Yeah. No one needs to tell them you're full now, right? You're eating. You know you're full. And you enjoy it. The hungrier you are, the more you enjoy it. So spiritual life is like this. So the test of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam nicely is that one gets positive enlightenment to act. So if one isn't getting this positive enlightenment, it means they're doing something wrong. And it usually means that our hearing process, Shravanam Kirtaning, is not very nice, because that is the most important process, to hear about transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. and then Narada Muni, then he spoke about his previous life as the son of a maidservant. Which is in the first canto, chapter 5, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport. And he explains how he became Narada Muni, how he got this position of a sage. He was the son of a maidservant living a very simple life in a cottage. And the pure devotees would come and visit during the rainy season, Chaturmasya. They would stay, because it's raining so much, they can't travel, they can't preach, so they just stay in one place. So they would stay at his place, his house, where his mother was. And his mother and Narada Muni would both serve the Bhaktivedantas. And Narada Muni said, just by serving them, taking their remnants and hearing from them, he attained this position as an eternal sage. Yeah. So the association of pure devotees is very important for our spiritual advancement in life. He said that just by being with them is powerful, but just by being just associated with them alone isn't enough. What do you have to do? Association means tattvidhi pranipatena parasparena sevaya. It means service. Sometimes we may have to do some menial service. And then through that service, the devotee become obliged to give knowledge, transcendental knowledge, to them. So it said that so you hear from them, you accept what they're saying, yeah, because just hearing is not enough. If your hearing is good, then you accept what they're saying. And then the third thing is you have to carry out their instructions, yeah. So the first is hearing, the second is accepting, and the third thing is to carry out the instructions, actually do what they're saying. If we don't do these three things, then, or we just do the first thing, just hearing, but we don't do the other two, then it stays on the ethereal platform, the knowledge. It doesn't go to the heart, and it doesn't manifest as a transcendental realization. It just stays on the mental platform. So hearing from them, and then carry out the instructions. Yasya deve parabhakti yata deve tata guru tasya yata kahita yata pakshanta mahampana. It's a very famous verse Srila Prabhupada often quotes from the Svetasvatara Upanishad. When one has unflinching faith in both the spiritual master and the supreme lord, then the import of Vedic knowledge is automatically revealed from within the heart, like this. Yeah, so Narada Muni was explaining the process, how we attained perfection to Vyasadev, like this. So then Narada Muni said to Vyasadev, he said, I want you to fix your mind in meditation. I want you to fix your mind in meditation, engage in devotional service. So Vyasadev, he sat there and he meditated. He meditated, and what did he meditate on? He meditated on the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. You know, he saw everything. Because originally he was just fixing his mind on artha, karma, moksha, these dharma, and these kind of things. Temporary, material things. So now he's finally meditating on Krishna's pastimes. He was meditating on the intimate pastimes between Krishna and the Rajavashis in Vrindavan, the gopis. He was thinking about everything Ramananda Roy was saying to Lord Chaitanya. All those things. Otherwise, how else, if he wasn't actually seeing it through realization in meditation, how could he write it down? Yeah. Because the Bhagavatam, the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to get us on the complete transcendental platform. And that means Raja Bhakti, Raganuga platform, ultimately, to serve Krishna in Vrindavan. So then Vyasadeva's in Samadhi and he's relishing these pastimes. So that is what we really need to do in our spiritual life, actually, is to really focus on hearing about Krishna from the authorized personalities, from the guru, who are coming in parampara, disciplic succession, not from the Mayavadis. Prabhupada writes at the end of the purport, he says, the perfection of meditation is realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his transcendental activities. But then he says, the Mayavadis cannot do this. Because they don't see Krishna as a person. So the Mayavadis actually remove the Chatur Sloki from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they mislead the innocent public, and this way sending everyone to hell. So we really do need to focus on Krishna's pastimes. That's ultimately what Narada Muni here in this verse is saying to Vyasadev. I want you to sit, I want you to meditate. And Vyasadev also saw Krishna and he saw Maya, the material energy. But he saw that Maya, the material energy, was completely under control. Krishna was completely controlling Maya. Yeah? Like this. So the guru is actually, he's a representative of Srimati Radharani and Balaram alone, or Balaram and Nityananda. Yeah. There's a forest in Vrindavan, a Kadamba forest. And, not Vrindavan, sorry, Vraj. In Vraj, is a Kadamba forest. And Krishna, he comes to that forest. Usually in the late afternoon. These are Krishna's late afternoon pastimes. And it said that he comes there with all his coward boyfriends, and they're all painted, covered in from the minerals from the forest. They paint each other. The coward boys like to paint Krishna's face really nicely and his body. And they're all decorated with flowers from the forest. And he said, in the middle of this forest is a beautiful lake, a crystalline lake. And Krishna sends the cows there and they drink the water from this lake. And on the edge of the forest is a tree, because it's a Kadamba forest. There's a Kadamba tree at the end of the forest. Kadamba, and the name of this tree is Tir Kadamba. Tir means bent, it's bent. And Krishna sits under the tree sometimes, and he plays his flute. And some of the acharyas say the reason why it's bent is because Krishna's playing the flute. And these great sages come and take birth as trees and plants and shrubs in Vrindavan, so they can witness Krishna's pastimes. So then Krishna, at the end of or late afternoon, when he's coming back to Nandagram with the cows, he climbs this tree, and he so he can look and see to make sure all the cows are here. None of the cows are going stray. And any of the cows go stray, he plays his flute, and they hear the flute, and they realize that Krishna's calling him, calling them. So they come like this. So, Nanda Maharaj, he's doing his business as a king. And he said that he's sitting on his throne, and he has all these, what do you call them, accountants or something. They're counting everything, how many churns of milk they've made in one day. But the opulence of Vrindavan outweighs the opulence of Vaikuntha or anything, you know. It says one grain of dust in Vrindavan is more opulent than all the Vaikuntha planets put together. But we can't understand this. We're just thinking, well, Nanda Maharaj is sitting there counting churns of milk, you know. What's so opulent about that? But the fact is that Krishna's involved in it. And while they're counting these churns, Nanda Maharaj, what is he thinking? He's just thinking about Krishna. He's thinking, he's looking over the hill, and he's just looking to see if he can see any dust cloud. When is Krishna and Balaram coming back? That's just what he's thinking, you know. So that's the opulence of Vrindavan. That is just totally absorbed in Krishna. And everything they have is used in Krishna's service, you know. So then Krishna comes back with Balaram. And it said that Nanda Maharaj is so happy to see him that he washes their feet with his tears. That's amazing, huh? So, in the same forest, Rupa Goswami sits there under the Kadamba tree, and he's writing books. He's writing books to give transcendental knowledge to the world, just like Brahma did, Narada Muni Vyas. So now Rupa Goswami is continuing that. So one day, Rupa Goswami was writing, and it was Sanatan Goswami, because Rupa is Sanatan Goswami is Rupa's spiritual master, and it was Sanatan Goswami's Vyasa Puja that day. But Rupa Goswami had nothing. He was just a simple sannyasi. He was just eat a few roots, or something he would find on the trees, a little bit of milk every day, and that was it. But he had nothing. So, but he was really upset because he wanted to cook a feast for Sanatan Goswami. So he's sitting there and he's trying to write and he's crying. And he can't write because his tears are flowing all over the leaves he's writing on, the manuscripts. So then Radharani, she sees that and immediately her heart, Radharani's heart melts. So she comes there with a bag full of boga, vegetables. And she says, Baba, I see that you're sitting here and you're really upset. The villagers have sent me with this bag of food because we see that you hardly eat anything. And then when Rupa Goswami heard that, he was so excited that he could cook a nice feast for his spiritual master that he completely forgot that this is Radharani standing in front of him. Didn't even notice. So then he's cooked this amazing feast. And then Sanatan Goswami returns because every day Sanatan Goswami comes to visit Rupa Goswami. And then Rupa serves him this amazing feast. And then Sanatan Goswami is eating and he says, I haven't tasted this. Prasadam. Last time I tasted this was when Gopal came and gave me some prasadam, you know. And he said, I'm eating this and I'm feeling all the 8 ecstatic symptoms at the same time. So what's going on here? You know, who gave you this? Who gave you the ingredients? So then Rupa Goswami explains the little girl that came. And because Sanatan Goswami knows everyone in the villages. He said, I don't know this girl. I've never seen her anywhere. But he said, the only thing I can say is that this girl, she's the daughter of King Brishabhanu. And then he kind of very lightly chastised Rupa Goswami. He said, our business here is to, we're spending day and night trying to bring Radha and Krishna together, writing these books. And you're taking Radharani away from Krishna. How can you do that, you know? But then anyway, then they both went into ecstasy and embraced each other and just started laughing and crying. You know, Radharani came. So we can see the position of the spiritual master. It's not a small position, you know. It's the highest position in the universe, actually. And this whole verse is all about spiritual master. It's all about parampara. It's all about guru. But the thing is, what are they giving, you know? We can very easily miss the point, you know, because devotional service has everything. Yeah? An association of pure devotee, we can get everything from that association. Sanatan Goswami says two things. There's a primary thing and a secondary thing. The primary thing you get from the association of pure devotee is you get love of God, prema. The secondary thing is you get everything from everything all the way up to liberation. But the devotees are not so interested in the secondary thing. It's the primary thing that we should be focusing on, and that's love of Krishna. The secondary things will all come anyway. But Krishna is complete. He's full of everything. There's nothing lacking in Krishna. We don't need to worry about our artha, our karma, our moksha. sense gratification, economic development, religiosity. We don't need to worry about these things. All we need to worry about is serving the lotus feet of the spiritual master and carrying out his instructions. Serving, accepting, carrying out his instructions. And when we do these things, then our life will become successful. It says that, why is it when Prabhupada was here, there were so many people that saw Prabhupada. But you could say the amount of people that saw him and were in his association, only a small amount actually really took it seriously. Right? He had 10,000 disciples. A lot of them left. Only took it seriously. Only a small amount. So I was trying to make a point. I forgot now. Lesson Suprema. But we can miss the point. I had something in my mind. Anyway, Hare Krishna. But, so that's the most important thing we can take from the spiritual master. So in the Adi Lila 146, in the purple, Prabhupada says, I can read it out. He says, in all the ancient literatures of devotional service and in the more recent songs of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other unalloyed Vaishnavas, the spiritual master is always considered either one of the confidential associates of Srimati Radharani or manifested representation of Srila Nityananda Prabhu. Like that. So it's not a small thing. So the holy name will give us everything. Because the last purple Prabhupada talks about meditating on transcendental pastimes of Krishna. So there's Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Lila. So the holy is the Nama, the name, the Rupa, the form of Krishna. As we chant, we will develop in our mind. We will see the form of Krishna as we chant more. And then as we advance, we will we'll understand Krishna's transcendental qualities. And then we'll see his pastimes like that. Nama Chintamini Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Sudo Nitya Mukto Abhinaktvam Nama Namino. So the translation to that in the Madhya Lila 17.133, it goes, the holy name of Krishna is transcendently blissful. It bestows all spiritual benedictions, for it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna's name is complete, and it is the form of all transcendental mellows. It is not a material name under any condition, and is no less powerful than Krishna himself. Since Krishna's name is not contaminated by the material qualities, there is no question of it being involved with Maya. Krishna's name is always liberated and spiritual. It is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. This is because the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are identical. So the problem is we don't see that because our senses are not pure. Yeah, so therefore we got to purify the senses. Yeah. Bhataji Krishna Namadhi Nabhavet Gram Indiriyahi Sevan Mukahi Jivaha Dho Swami Vasparati Adha. So our senses are not pure. We can't see Krishna, but if we engage the tongue in chanting the holy name, and eating Krishna prasadam, and then we'll be able to see Krishna. Adha. Sparati means manifested. Adha means that all of Krishna's name, form, and qualities will manifest with a purified mind and senses. Like that. So, you know, in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult. People have no... It said that there's no good qualities in Kali Yuga. People have no sukriti from the previous life, hardly. You know? But Lord Chaitanya has come and he's giving this to everyone very easily. And we need to... we need to also be a little bit compassionate and also continue the parampara system by preaching Krishna consciousness like that. Anyway, I had a lot more to say, but we're running out of time. So, who else did Krishna speak the Chatushloki to? Anyone know? It was Uddhava. He spoke it to Uddhava. Maitreya Rishi was also there when he was speaking the Chatushloki to Uddhava. But he said that when Krishna spoke it to Uddhava, he presented it in a more of a deeper way than he did to Brahma, because Uddhava was on a higher platform of understanding. I haven't got time to say that. Anyways, we're running out of time. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Gauranga. That means that Krishna, the Vishnu, he gave to Brahma only Chatushloki, nothing else.
Sorry?
That Chatushloki is only thing which, verses which is given to Brahma. And out of this Chatushloki, he first wrote entire Vedas, and then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. And I think in Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned that within this Chatushloki, he gave him a hint of 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And then I'm just wondering how this would fit in. But that means he would, from Chatushloki, he wrote entire Vedas, and then wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. Is that how he...
You're talking about Brahma?
Yeah. He didn't spoke Vedas, he just spoke Chatushloki.
No, Brahma realized it through meditation. He didn't write it.
Yeah, later on.
Krishna Krishna injected the transcendental knowledge within Brahma. Brahma didn't need to write it down. He was so intelligent, he could just remember it all.
That's what I'm, you know. He didn't give him Vedic knowledge, he gave him just Chatushloki. Out of that, he expanded. And then he gave to Narada, to Vyasadeva, how it goes. So the only thing is Chatushloki is given, nothing else. Yeah. And then.
Microphone over here.
Hare Krishna. Could you explain about the point about positive enlightenment again? Because I don't think I got it. What did that kind of mean? Like, you said it was not a good thing.
What did I say?
You said you coined the term positive enlightenment. Probably it was related to like this realization that we're very fallen. Was it? I don't know.
Did I say that? Oh, yeah. Those three things. Were you in association of the spiritual master or pure devotees? Yeah. So the way to receive transcendental knowledge, yeah, there's three things. You hear from them, and then from hearing, you accept it. You have to accept that what they're saying is the truth. Because if you don't accept what they're saying is the truth, then you're not going to be inspired to want to follow what they're saying, which is the third thing. If we just keep it on the platform of hearing, but we don't do the other two, then it just stays on a mental platform. We don't get realization. It doesn't go to the heart. Is that what you're talking? Is that what you mean? It doesn't go to the heart. Because there are so many people in the material world who know the Bhagavatam more than, you know, they can quote the Bhagavad Gita inside out, backwards, sideways, you know, whatever. They know the Srimad Bhagavatam more than we do. But because they're not actually, they haven't actually understood the real purport of the Bhagavatam, which is, you know, service to Lord Krishna. Then their knowledge is just it's just academic. Yeah. So we need to accept what's been said, and we need to carry out the instructions of what's been said, and then this way we get positive knowledge, realization, positive realization. And the absolute truth. does that answer your question?
Hare Krishna, thank you. Just going back to Turner Prabhu's question, I mean, yesterday's verse, it mentions in the purport that, you know, the original four verses were given to Lord Brahma, and then he actually advised, Prabhupada is mentioning this, that he then advised Narad Muni to then expand on those verses.
Expand on them, yeah.
And then we understand that as it goes down, you know, this Bhagavatam has been spoken various times, and each time it has been expanded on. Yeah. And so then Veda Vyas, when he, you know, he then himself recites it to Sukadev Goswami, then Sukadev Goswami recites it to the sages at the Ganga, and then from there we know that Suta Goswami recites it at the sages to the sages of Naimisharanya, when Veda Vyasa was present. And of all the different versions of the Bhagavatam that were there, all bona fide, of course, and Veda Vyasa specifically chose the one by Suta Goswami because he felt that that was most relevant for Kali Yuga. Uh-huh. Because each bona fide commentator gives a certain angle on the Bhagavatam, but the one that Suta Goswami gave, Vedavyas felt this should be the one that should be propagated, like the one that we're studying from. Right. So the original four, that means the disciples subsequently were given the injunction to expand on it, to unpack those four verses to, you know, like different angles and things like that, you know, the four verses to 10 topics, and then like that, it multiplies. I don't know if that sheds any light on this.
It's expanded more as the acharyas present it.
Yeah.
There are other versions. We know that in the heavenly planets, there's a Bhagavatam which is ours is 18,000 verses. In earthly realm, but there may be. I'm not sure, but I know that for us. You know, in this observation of Sampradaya, we're recommended to follow Suta Goswami's one that which we are doing. It's the one that Prabhupada's given us.
Yeah, there's, I mean, so much could be said about that. There's so many complexities. I mean, yesterday's class was quite detailed and complex. and what did he say? So the Mahabharata, as far as I know, Vyasadev wrote the Mahabharata before the Bhagavatam, before he heard the Bhagavatam. It was written, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
but that's still not giving the full satisfaction because it wasn't pure bhakti.
No, of course.
Yeah,
it wasn't. I mean, that's
mixed. There was bhakti in it, but there was other things like dharma and art.
Yeah, it was emphasizing too much on karma, moksha, and dharma, and missing pure devotional service.
Yeah.
Okay, Maharaj. Do you want to say in the microphone?
What if you can't follow the instruction of the spiritual master?
If you can't follow? It's a good question. If you can't follow the instructions of the spiritual master? Then you need to speak to your spiritual master and get some advice. I mean, the basic instructions Prabhupada gave, really basic instructions, follow the four eggs, chant 16 rounds. And he repeats that over and over again in his books. And then when we do that, when we do the basic, then everything else will slowly start to manifest. But if we don't do the basics, then when there's no point talking about Raja Bhakti if we're not even chanting our prescribed number of rounds or following the principles. Yeah, if you can't follow, then that's a problem. But you need to, whatever problem we have, we need to communicate that with the Vaishnavas. Sri Rupa Goswami says, it's very important that we reveal our mind in confidence. But the false ego sometimes prevents us from doing that, doesn't it? Because we don't want people to think, oh, I'm so fallen. Yeah. We want people to continue thinking I'm so advanced. But what would you say on that?
Well, in the beginning, even Prabhupada couldn't follow his spiritual master's instructions, you know, due to his particular situation. But eventually, he did, you know.
But he accepted it within his heart.
He accepted it. He didn't give up, and at some point, he was able to do it.
But the fact that he ultimately did do it. So it was just a matter of time separating it, that's all. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The spiritual master gives an instruction. We may not be able to do it right away, but we accept it within our heart and aspire to want to do it and carry out that instruction. Somehow Krishna will maybe empower us to be able to do it.
It's a good point that you made that, you know, if it's just too much for you, if you actually feed back to the spiritual master, he may be able to help you and give you something you can do.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, lines in stone all the time. It's a relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, sometimes the guru says, I want you to go there and preach or do this and do that. Practically, we may not be able to do it right away, but if we accept it, then Krishna might manifest it, give us the opportunity, give us, arrange things in such a way that we can carry out that instruction one day. Depends how big the instruction is, you know. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to instruct us to write a Bhagavatam. Or that's already been done. Yeah, okay. Gyantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.